Hi everyone, it's Adam from Monkey Tennis here. Just saying a huge thank you to all of you that have supported my charity appeal so far. For those that haven't heard about it, this September I'm going to be swimming 15 kilometres between five islands in Cornwall. I'll be swimming the Isles of Scilly, that's Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. I'm doing it because I want to, but also to raise money for CALM, the Campaign Against Living Miserably. It's a well-known statistic that 125 people in the UK die by suicide every week, and CALM run a free and confidential helpline for people to speak through their problems and ultimately to help prevent suicides. I'm looking to raise enough money to train two new phone workers to man those lines, and I'll be doing it by swimming the Isles of Scilly in Cornwall. If you're looking to support me, it would be greatly appreciated. You can donate at justgiving.com. Just go there and search for Adam Swim Scilly. That's Adam Swim Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. All donations greatly appreciated. Thank you for helping me to support CALM. And now, on with Monkey Tennis.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I must complete the journey that my father never could. I must do it on foot. Can't remember why. It will be called The Footsteps of My Father Walk. My home isn't insulated.
Monkey tennis?
Heathrow is just an absolute tit of an airport. Quite simply, cows.
Monkey tennis?
With a stupid Ewok head.
Blabber on him, Nolsey.
Love you, Aim.
Monkey tennis?
A total wazzock of a guy. Infinity, the final frontier.
Monkey tennis?
We will talk about it now, Mr. Nichols.
Monkey tennis?
Motherfucker.
Gary Wilmot. Okay. Sue Cook. Okay. Dale Winton. Okay.
Monkey tennis?
Oh, fuck off, Nick.
Hello, friends, once again, and welcome to a brand new series of Monkey Tennis, the Alan Partridge fan podcast. I'm Adam Brooks, and I'm joined by Tom Dark.
Oh, this tea tastes of chicken.
Nick Alder.
Eat a little snack. Oop, fat back.
And Tom Stab.
That was classic intercourse.
So welcome back, everybody. It's been a little while. We've got a lot to discuss. Now, those of you that follow us on social media will know that we're going to be covering the Knowing Me, Knowing You radio series, as well as a couple of other tits bits.
Tits bits.
But for now, there's a lot happening in real time in Alan world. By the time you hear this, some of this may already be out of date, but please do keep listening as we speculate wildly about what's coming up this year for Alan Partridge. So which should we start with? We heard that there might be a second series of This Time with Alan Partridge. We've heard that Alan's going to launch his own podcast. Where to jump off, guys?
Well, I mean, I think it's probably just quickly worth stressing that nothing has been officially announced or confirmed at the time that we're recording this, of course. There has been some speculation because obviously Steve's done a few interviews for the press run for Greed.
Well, he's been doing loads because they're also promoting the trip to Greece as well, aren't they?
Yes.
Mm. So he's been doing loads of press and promo around that.
Promo splurge, if you will. And it seems that he is also a bit looser with the details of forthcoming Alan projects than perhaps he's supposed to be. So we have heard details that we've then had sort of unconfirmed, and there's I think take everything that you hear from Steve with a pinch of salt, but we will go over his various media appearances in a few moments.
I think we can maybe start with on the Steve mentioning This Time series two happening. Interesting getting a few responses where it's still a bit of a mixed bag about the first series that happened. Andrew Moody said I liked it more on second viewing but would rather see him back in a sitcom setting like I'm Alan Partridge 1 and 2. David Ellis said, this time is moribund and I'll be out rambling and drinking in beer gardens anyway. And Michael Cullum said, I think I speak for most of us here when I say splendid and tremendous. And anyone who thinks differently is just sad. So still a mixed bag about this time, but personally, I'm looking forward to a second series.
I think, though, that also you need to remember those reviews are as much just opportunities to get Alanisms into a sentence as they are actual critical reviews.
You are bang right there.
I think like this podcast.
Yeah.
In terms of a second series of this time, I think I'd certainly want to see one, but also I think what I'd like to see is a little bit more narrative drive. I think that was one thing that I was a bit disappointed in the first series, was I hoped that kind of things behind the scenes would move at a bit of a faster pace rather than them just Jenny and Alan just sort of disgruntling each other and it coming to a bit of a head.
I guess it opens up an opportunity for series two to be a bit more behind the scenes and actually delve into the Alan Jenny relationship and how that develops.
Definitely. Possibly. I mean, we'll come on to, as we said, Steve's been talking to a lot of media outlets and we've kind of gathered the bits that we've learned from those about future Alan. So we'll come on to it. But certainly I get the impression from some things that he said in the Big Issue interview that Jenny would be a much bigger part of the next series. So it might almost become sort of maybe even level pegging or certainly that her narrative would become a bigger part of it than just being a foil to Alan.
I mean, I think for me personally, from that series, from this time series one, Susanna Fielding was a bit of a breakout star for me. I thought she was amazing in that series, so I'd be very happy to see her sort of have an even more integral role, because she was pretty integral in the first series, but to step that up. And I guess the Steve and the Gibbons brothers will, you know, they're smart people, they'll know what worked in the first series and what didn't work in the first series, and I guess you can kind of tailor that a little bit more.
I also want to see Lynn presenting Jumble. I think that's really important that should happen.
Yeah.
I guess the first sort of big news story was Steve when he was on Empire's 400th live episode. He said that a second series of this time was happening, and that there would also be a podcast coming next month, which at the time that we're recording this in February will be March 2020. Again, like I said earlier, nothing officially confirmed, but I think we can play that clip in now and hear what Steve had to say on the Empire podcast.
So that's why it's okay.
Have we seen the last of him? Is that a one-off?
Well, I liked doing him, you know.
Yeah.
So I think he might come show his, because we're probably going to do another series of this time.
Fantastic.
I'm sure he might make another appearance. Yeah.
There are always more IRA propaganda.
I think the podcast thing is interesting. I'd be curious to know how much of this is them genuinely thinking that Alan can work within the medium, which, to be fair, I think he can. And how much of it is almost a reaction to the popularity of podcasts in general?
Specifically Monkey Tennis.
Yeah, exactly.
I think immediately the thing that springs to mind, I haven't actually listened to it personally, but I'm aware that there is a Ron Burgundy podcast. So Will Ferrell in character as Ron Burgundy.
I haven't listened either, but that's exactly what I thought of as well.
Yeah, so I mean, it's going to be an interesting logistical challenge for us and to see how we cover that. But obviously nothing has been confirmed yet, so we don't know really officially how many episodes it's going to be, what it's going to cover. Steve did mention in that clip that you just heard the title of the show. I mean, that doesn't really lend itself to any kind of indication of what it's going to be narratively, so I guess we just have to kind of wait and see. But it's going to be interesting, certainly.
I think he said, as a very throwaway comment in an interview, it might have been Radio 2 or something, about it being an 18 episode podcast series.
Right.
Definitely going to be a challenge then.
I can't remember where that came from. But just to stress, none of this is official. We're just grabbing bits of information as we've got them. So not quite sure how that's all going to develop.
I think the other thing that's interesting as well is almost, not that it's any of our business, but the commercial model that sits behind podcasts, and obviously, you know, how much Steve and the team would make from podcasting versus selling it to Sky for 100K.
Are you saying he's going to be bitterly disappointed?
I suppose one question that might come up is to what extent the podcast is freely available, or whether it is tied as an exclusive, because obviously
Audible original.
Exactly.
Or something like
if it's released just on one platform, you can see that's where the money might come from. Mm. Whereas if you're just putting it out as a bit of fun everywhere, it's hard to see how that would justify their time.
Or it might just be exclusive on BBC Sounds. I mean, it might be part of the wider, I mean, again, we're speculating, it might be part of the wider deal for a second series of this time. We just don't know. So it's all speculation at this point.
Cool. So should we just rifle through some of the other interviews that Steve's done recently? I read him in the FT, a couple of bits that I really liked in his interview. To quote Steve, he said, "My idea of indulgence is to watch air crash investigations with a bar of chocolate." I thought that was pure real life Partridge there, where Coogan and Partridge combine.
He must know that as well. He must know. I think he's playing that up.
Sure. And they talked about Partridge being outstripped by real TV presenters such as Richard Madeley and Piers Morgan. And Coogan said, there's no doubt that Alan Partridge is more subtle than the people you've mentioned. He's more real, weirdly. It was quite an interesting take.
I remember some of the negative feedback around this time from the media, and I think from fans as well, was that sort of Trump and Madeley, I know they're completely different, but sort of like those kind of figures, those polarizing figures have almost, you know,
being so extreme.
So extreme that the comedy of Alan is kind of nulled a little bit because they're way more extreme versions of
it's
that.
The sort of thing that comes up a lot when people interview Armando Iannucci about the thick of it as well, always saying, well, you couldn't do it now, could you? Because politics has evolved beyond
beyond parody almost, that
was in that show.
I also think Iannucci agrees with that as well. I think he says that himself.
Yeah, definitely.
One more line from the FT interview. Steve said, Alan Partridge subsidises my work with Michael Winterbottom, which we've kind of talked about that before, that one for you, one for me type idea.
That's a very nice way of putting it.
Yeah.
And also the one for them is kind of, I get to go to Greece for a few weeks as well. It's not exactly a hardship, is it?
I think Steve Coogan must be really enjoying his time in Greece at the moment. That's a film and a whole TV series over there.
There's a couple of other filmed interviews that I would certainly recommend listeners check out if they can. One is the one that Steve Coogan did with Joe. The interview's mainly about the film Greed, which came out just before we started recording. But he did mention in it that they finished recording the podcast, the Alan Partridge podcast, already, and that they may put fake ads in it, which I thought was particularly nice because that's exactly what we did in our first couple of series.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, appreciate that. He also did a filmed interview with GQ. There wasn't a huge amount of intel in terms of future Alan projects, but it is a great watch because it's basically him looking back at clips throughout his career of Philomena and Alan Partridge and effectively watching them until he has a little chuckle and then pausing them and kind of giving us a bit of insight about how they did those clips and why they did them the way they did. So that was really good.
That's what I quite liked about that, the fact that he did seem to genuinely enjoy watching those back as well. I was quite pleased about that.
And also they picked, you know, I mean, I can't blame them, but they picked the absolutely most obvious clips, you know, like shouting Dan and smell my cheese. And I thought he might have been sick to the back teeth of seeing them, but he seemed to be enjoying watching them.
Yeah, I think the only one that he was maybe a little bit like that was the Dan one. When that still came up and it was about to be played, he said something along the lines of, oh, right, this one, or oh, here we go, like that sort of thing. But all the other ones that they played, he kind of, you know, did laugh. And you know I think we know from what Steve says in interviews that he still has a lot of warmth and love for that character, not just for the financial reasons, but also because I think he really enjoys playing him again.
Yeah, he hardened towards him, didn't he, when he kind of went to America and wanted to really try to do some other things. And then, and I think, as he says, actually, in the GQ interview, I think when he's watching a clip of Philomena, that was a very freeing film for him to do because it made Alan, you know, a fun luxury that he could go back to because it was fun rather than a kind of a necessity because it was his living. He also gave a really long, really great cover interview with The Big Issue. You can't buy it anymore, so I don't feel uncomfortable ethically about reading out a short excerpt. there's a big section in it about the Alan Partridge podcast. It actually gives probably more insight than I've seen anywhere else. He said, we've just finished a podcast, which will be announced shortly and out quite soon, of Alan's private life. It's Alan at home, a smaller, more unplugged kind of Alan. He's done this time and has some degree of success, and it's him trying to cash in on it. That's a bit more information in terms of the setup of it. I expect it probably will be primarily him speaking into a microphone. I don't expect there'll be a lot of additional characters, I don't think. It sounds like it's going to be, you know, kind of maybe it'll be a bit self-helpy, you know, it's kind of like the lessons of my life with Alan Partridge, that sort of thing, which I think could
lessons
work really
life
well.
Management.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the thing as well is that however it works, it's they've got form, the writers and creators and Steve, of turning to new outlets, I suppose, you know, film and radio and so on. This is probably the first time that an outlet in podcasting that they're having a go at didn't exist when they started Alan, you know. I suppose when they first did like the day-to-day, that was probably pre-internet, so Mid-Morning Matters webcast was not a possibility, but this is the first time there's an entirely new medium that's existed since Alan.
I think something I really imagine with this, and I'd be surprised if they don't take this conceit forward with it, is Alan kind of hating the concept of podcasts but feeling like it's something he needs to do, and kind of all the hilarity that ensues with that. I would imagine
there's definitely going to be some fun poked at the conventions of podcasts, aren't there? You know, like kind of adverts for mattresses and so on.
And I mean, of course, they poked fun at fan podcasts in this time already with the Doctor Who thing, didn't they? So I would imagine it'd be a continuation of that.
There's so many angles to attack it from, isn't there? There's like Alan, you know, funny because he's an odd character. There's making fun of the conventions of podcasts. There's also Alan trying to trying to recreate the conventions of podcasting, getting it wrong.
Yeah, exactly.
And potentially even a guest as well. So there's so much to enjoy.
Yeah. And hopefully shouting at Lynn in the background.
There's also a bit of chat in the Big Issue interview about the second series of This Time. He said, we'll probably do another This Time. It was great having Susanna Fielding. She was brilliant. And it was great to have her own story rather than just being a two-dimensional foil for Alan. So we're just doing that. I mean, initially when I read that, I thought when he says, so we're just doing that, I thought he was talking about actually just developing Jenny's story almost independent of Alan. But I think he means we're just doing that. We're just making the series.
Yeah.
Steve was also on the Simon Mayo and Mark Kermode film show when he was talking about Greed. And he'd been kind of doing the rounds with Michael Winterbottom. Interestingly, they didn't really talk much about Alan, although they did say that Steve had kind of come in at the last minute to kind of help the project out because he wasn't originally... the person they had in mind to play that role in Greed. They did say Sacha Baron Cohen was the original lead for that, which I thought interesting. Be keen to see how he... I don't know what you thought, but I thought Steve Coogan looked like quite a convincing Philip Green, basically.
Yeah,
I mean, I guess, obviously, yeah, it's... that they're treading a fine line between fiction and reality, aren't they? Some they say in most of these interviews that some of the lines in the film are things that Philip Green's actually said.
Right.
So question to the group, could you get Sacha Baron Cohen in to play Alan Partridge last minute? If Steve pulled out of the filming of the next series of Alan Partridge, could Sacha Baron Cohen step into those
shoes? Would he be
shoes?
A good, when you talked about this before, like a good young Alan Partridge or a good Fernando or something like that?
Yeah, or like a kind of alternate reality Partridge where he tried to be like a more controversial LBC kind of shock jock. I can imagine Sacha Baron Cohen doing that sort of Alan.
Yeah.
An alternate reality, so an alternate APU, so an AAPU.
Yes,
you heard it here first.
And you say young Alan Partridge, he's 48.
It's younger than Coogs though, isn't it? So still works.
Just.
So that's just a brief summary of some of the interviews that Steve Coogan's given recently in the run-up to The Trip and in the run-up to Greed and also about future Alan. But really, the people that matter are you, the listeners. So we're now going to go over to some of the feedback we've had from you since we recorded Series 8, beginning with some tidbits from Tom Stabb.
So one of the pieces of feedback we probably had the biggest volume of was probably a collective group brain fart when doing our series on Nomad. We had quite a lot of people point out that we got our Rocky and our Rambos mixed up a little bit.
Oh, dear.
Which I think is just like one of those things where we're in the moment of recording the podcast and, you know, not necessarily taking everything in because we've got points to make. We're reading ahead.
This is the thing. I don't think it paints us in a very good light because I think the genuine excuse is none of us were fully paying attention to what Adam was saying at the time.
Including me.
Even though that's the genuine reason, that doesn't make it okay.
No.
I mean, it's a reason. So we've got a couple of voice notes of people pointing this out. So we're going to drop those in now.
Hi, guys. I was just listening to your discussion about the opening chapters of Nomad when you were talking about the line about the stairs at the Philadelphia Town Hall and discussing if that was maybe a more important building and that was the joke. I think the joke is that he says Rambo running up the stairs when clearly it's Rocky.
Yeah.
I don't know how you missed that one. Anyway, cheers for the show. Keep it up. Bye.
I'll tell you how we missed it, Alex. It's because we're fallible humans. Please do not elevate us to the level of gods.
Say it like it is, mate. It went tits up.
We also had a couple of emails on that as well, including one from Philip Moore in Northampton. Big up yourself from Northampton, like me. Hate to be so early with the critique, like 7 a.m. early. I assume that means that's when he sent the email.
Does that mean he must have been listening like the moment it went live on...
Yep, and was up with the Partridge.
Yep. A day dot there, Philip. But you've done such a classic misunderstanding of a Nomad joke, I had to email in and point it out and laugh at you.
He just had to do that.
There you all are at length discussing why the joke is that it's Philadelphia City Hall rather than Town Hall and not actually noticing that the joke is, he says Rambo, which of course he should be saying Rocky. Is it a mistake? Yes, it bloody well is, for shame. So that's the actual joke. Happy to be of help in clearing that up. And we had a few tweets about that as well. But yeah, the general consensus is that we don't really listen to what Adam's saying when recording the podcast.
Yep.
I just can't believe that there's five of us that were in that room listening to this and no one picked up on it.
Good point. You've gone for the five there. So what we're doing now, we're putting the blame onto Jed.
Yes, he is 1/5 of the problem.
Jed, you should have pulled us up on this.
Unless Jed isn't listening either.
That is quite possible. He's probably playing Football Manager, isn't he?
Yeah.
Hi, guys. Just listening to the new podcast, Nomad.
Are you driving?
Just a quick point I want to pick you up on. The joke that you missed was it's Rocky on the Philadelphia steps.
Yeah, we know.
Town Hall, not Rambo. So
yes, we know.
Just to be clear, Rocky,
yes,
not Rambo.
We know.
Motherfuckers.
Thanks very much for that. And also Dan Beckett on Twitter said, plus it's Philadelphia Art Museum, not a town hall. Brilliant. So I think even my original point was wrong.
He's the only person that's pointing that out.
Yeah, that's true. Moving on, we had an email from Martin Lyons. He said, hi guys, I was wondering after listening to the latest episodes about the start of Nomad, is there more than one audiobook version? I have the hardback and got the audiobook the day it came out, and my audiobook has a list of condemnations right after the lack of acknowledgements. This does not appear in the hardcover. Have you guys heard this? If not, I can cut it out and send it. Now, of course, I'm wondering if there are any more edits between audiobook versions. For reference, the length of my version is 6 hours, 3 minutes and 3 seconds. Very precise. Thank you, Martin. So we've done two things here. Firstly, we've obviously gone back to see if there is a section of condemnations in the audiobook. And also we've had a quick look at how long the versions that we've got of the audiobook are. Thank you, Martin, who also, he actually put the clip in and sent it to us. So we'll play that out to you now. Here we go.
Acknowledgements. On this occasion, there is no one I wish to acknowledge. Thank you. Condemnations. Although there is no one I wish to acknowledge, there are many I wish to condemn. Stephen McComb. Kim Wilde. The Dimbleby Brothers. Peter Sissons, Swing Ball Dispute. BBC Good Food Magazine. Quick Fit Fitters. ISIS. Loud Eaters. My friend Andrew's nephew, Sean. CompareTheMarket.com. Janet Street Porter and her ilk. All the team at Timpson's in Chapelfield Shopping Centre. The woman in the Nissan Juke who cut me up at Grapes Hill roundabout 30th December 2015. You're an idiot and you should learn to do the wanker sign better. Edmonds.
Okay, and so Martin also says, yeah, the length of his book, audiobook, was 6 hours, 3 minutes and 3 seconds. We've done a bit of cross-referencing to see if we've all got the same, or whether maybe there's some secret partridge hidden in some people's versions.
I mean, I checked on iTunes. The version on iTunes is 6 hours and 2 minutes, so that kind of matches up with what he's got.
So that definitely isn't in our versions, which is weird.
Because that's really funny as well.
Yeah,
I like
it's great.
That.
It's great.
Perhaps a legal challenge from Edmonds forced its removal. I don't know.
Has he heard the rest of the book?
Could be the Dimbleby brothers. There's definitely a grudge held there as well. Yeah, that was really good. I like that. Anyway, we'll move on now to the J. Higgs mystery, which I'm sure everybody will be on tenterhooks to hear more about. So obviously, we put forward quite a controversial suggestion that perhaps John Higgs had been involved in ghostwriting Nomad. We had an email from Matty Connig saying the following. Just a quick note to debunk producer Jed's theory about J. Higgs. That special thanks in fact refers to none other than Jonathan Higgs, lead singer of Art Rocker's Everything Everything, who designed the recreation of Alan's logo featured on the site. And then he's put a link to the original tweet where I think there was some kind of online competition where he submitted it. So there we have it. Apparently that's the answer.
I think I'd be keen to say, does anyone else have any kind of means by which this can be proved to be true?
Well, I think it's a more likely theory than Jed's theory that somebody else that had the same publisher was writing a similar book that was then the basis for Nomad, and then the only way they thanked him was a secret message on a fictitious website.
Absolute loony conspiracy theorist.
Yeah. On the tweets, he's basically linked to some tweets back in 2016, where you can see Jonathan J. Higgs, that's the guy from Everything Everything, saying, I made the one they put up. It was about 5 days later than this thread where there'd basically been a few other graphic designers having a go at making it. Another fun bit here as well. We did tweet John Higgs from the Monkey Tennis account saying, hi, John Higgs, did you enjoy writing Nomad? He did actually reply saying, ha, yes, very much. I mean... Technically, an admission of guilt. He wrote, hi, yes, very much. I listened to the audiobook of that when I was writing Watling Street. In my head, I was indeed writing Nomad.
Mm.
Now, I'm pretty sure the timeline of that doesn't actually line up.
Mm.
So, still under suspicion.
So, perhaps in his head, he was indeed writing Nomad. But maybe also in his hands.
And next, we had a message from Fraser Davidson, who says, I emailed Lynn when Nomad came out. Here's the reply I got. Assumed it was an auto response, maybe not. And the response reads, thanks, Fraser. May the good Lord guide you, Lynn Benfield. I mean, it sounds genuine.
I mean, that's through the email link that was on the Footsteps of My Father website, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. So that's a different response to, because I think Adam and I both emailed that address and we did get the same like auto-generated response, didn't we?
I'm not sure I got one. I think perhaps this is something they were only doing for a limited time when the book came out, and then they lost interest.
An auto response as well.
Sure. But I mean, it's like that. Whoever was paying the bills for that to happen, it's since lapsed because the book's been out for a couple of years.
Yeah. And then we had a follow-up message on a similar theme from JJ Dunning, who went to a cracking owl sanctuary and found an owl that was sponsored by Aileen Benfield. He's shared a link to a tweet which essentially shows a More Pork owl, which amused me, just the name.
More Pork.
More Pork. The owl is the More Pork owl. He's called Bandit, although he used to be called Boo Book. I think that's probably relevant. Don't need to go into that detail.
Yeah, I think you're shit-chatting by this point.
Yeah. The point being that Lynn Benfield has kindly sponsored that owl, and there's a picture with of a sign that says, kindly sponsored by Lynn Benfield.
Okay, so do we think, is that a genuine real-life Lynn Benfield, or is that somebody who's in on the gag?
Is no, that one.
That yeah. is... That is
an, it's got to be, right?
That is an absolute deep-dive Partridge Gold fan action.
That's the sort of thing we are here for.
Very typical of the very best of Alan Partridge fans, speaking as someone who has named their own pet Lynn as well. if we could achieve one thing in the years of the 9 series of doing this podcast, it's that at least 1 in 5 people listening to this could go out and sponsor an animal on behalf of a character from Alan Partridge. Or better still, pay enough to name the animal after Simon or Lynn or Psychic Simon. Yeah. If anybody does this, send us a picture and we'll absolutely give you the glory you deserve. I think it's a wonderful thing to be doing.
So your mention of Simon just made me think there as well. The condemnations thing, just to skip backwards. Did you like the compare the market, compare the meerkat reference as well?
Simon Greenall. Oh, because Simon Greenall is the voice of the meerkats. Yeah, yeah. I like
very
that.
Very good, very good.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
We're going to take it back to Nomad again with chat about twocking. Now, if you remember from Nomad, twocking was a, as Alan describes in the book, a Newcastlian word, which means which stands for taking without consent. We had quite a lot of feedback on this. It's something that people obviously want to get in touch with us about and confirm their interpretation or where they think it came from. So, as Alan says, he believes it to be a Newcastlian word. We've got an email from Andrew Green who says, I'm originally from Washington, Tyne and Wear, which technically counts as Sunderland rather than Newcastle. And I remember the word from school. As far as I can remember, it stands for taking without owner's consent. I've always thought it was a northeastern phrase, and I first heard it in a joke ringtone called the Chav Song. I've managed to find it on YouTube. Here's a link. And if you play this in the podcast, I apologise to all who hear it. And we're going to play a clip of it now.
Listen to this, Quanto. It's fucking wicked.
Ho, 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 ho.
Oh dear.
I'm a charver. I'll twat your mortar.
If you
I'll swap your parts from your box all over. Now grab your monkey and get yourself over. You'll find us up the park. Brand new box of tabs, but I'm struggling to find myself a spark. Don't know what to do, so I pulled out my phone. Rang my best mate, but the fucker wasn't home. You'll find us up the park. Brand new box of tabs, but I'm struggling to find myself a spark. Don't know what to do, so I pulled out my phone. Rang my best mate, but the fucker wasn't
home. Something.
Well, yeah, they got talking quite early there, didn't they? Nice. Thank you, Andrew. We also had a few people get in touch with us on Twitter about this as well. John Ratton says, always thought that twok was a Scouse thing. Craig Walker, hey lads, I'm a Newcastlian and I've definitely heard twok. Not sure if it's only from Newcastle, but defo a thing. The Audacity 180 also got in touch on Twitter saying, our work Geordie knows what twok means and he works in an office, so so is certainly adequately educated.
Wow.
Whether or not
that is mean.
Whether or not it is of Geordie origin, I don't know, although he was the only one that laughed when I said, he said, I know what twokin' man. And I hope this helps with your investigation. Bye.
It is an investigation. That's the appropriate word here.
Chrissy Mac 26. Hi boys, twok is a Geordie word and was in the Geordie dialect book in the Newcastle Chronicle. So your female Geordie was wrong. Just to confirm, that is my friend Sophie, who I got in touch with in the last series to confirm whether twok was a Newcastlian word or not, and she had never heard of it. So quite a few people getting in touch and saying that is actually a Geordie
Does
thing.
Does that just mean Sophie comes from an area of Newcastle where twokking did not occur?
Maybe. Possibly. Don't know.
Okay, we've also had an email from Drew Cameron titled A Piece of Proper Partridge Pedantry with Peas.
More peas than a pincher's pamper.
I shall rattle through it because it's quite long. He said, I enjoyed your deep dive into Nomad. As usual, lovely stuff. Thanks very much, Drew. However, I have to pull you up on one thing. Of course you do. There was a comment that the only people who recognised Alan in the APU were Brian the Tramp in Nomad, the woman in the car from Alpha Papa, and Jed Maxwell from I'm Alan Partridge. This is not the case. While the following list may open me up to accusations of pedantry, I feel justified because this is an Alan Partridge podcast and you have interviewed one of the list's members. In chronological order, the other people who recognised Alan on site. One, Lisa Thornton, the Kim Kuap beauty contest, who bears a striking resemblance to Susan. She says, gushes and says, I've always wanted to meet you. Two, Peter Linehan, the chap in the BBC restaurant responsible for revamping their current affairs, says, we haven't met, but I liked your chat show. Three, the farmers who launched a targeted cow strike. Four, Sir Dansworth of Moodyshire comments, and I know who you are, Norfolk Knights. And Kevin Ruddock, the CEO of First Person Finance, who suffers an Alan attack in Scissored Isle, listens to Alan's show every morning, and his favourite bit is Lunchtime Lunatics. He said, keep up the fantastic work. That's daft. Keep up the good work. Thanks very much, Drew. I think this is a rare occasion that you've got us absolutely bang to rights. And yes, it is pedantry, but we've encouraged it, so we can hardly complain now.
The only one that I would potentially put a flag on is the second one, the Peter Linehan one, where that guy could actually just be telling a lie that he'd heard of Alan's. That he liked Alan's show.
There's definitely a degree of politeness in some of these, isn't there?
Speaking of other things that we would like to encourage, no, that's not a good link because it's time to talk about Nick Knowles. I just really enjoyed a few of the Nick Knowles-based responses that we've had in reference to Nomad. Chris Miller on Twitter, this really tickled me. Huge bone to pick. I was just winding my car windows down to get rid of the condensation, and to my neighbours, innocent bystanders, it may have looked like I was listening to Nick Knowles. Dippy V on Twitter wrote to us saying, oh God, that's singing from Nick Knowles. As a music teacher, that's not what I wanted to hear whilst getting up. Oh dear. And Marcus Whitehead on Facebook said, Nick Knowles is an oily git. I just enjoyed those. So I thought it was worth putting them out. And quickly jumping to another C-list TV presenter in a rogue trader style, we also had a message in about Dom Littlewood from Barbara Kirk. Dom Littlewood said he'd like to get rid of Alan Partridge programmes in the sidebar of his telly review in the Sunday Express. I'd like to get rid of Dom Littlewood and all that ilk. I think we'd agree with you there, Barbara. I did wonder, though, does Dom Littlewood hate Partridge because he knows that he gets mocked in Nomad? The line in Nomad about a presenter who looks and sounds like he won his primetime BBC presenting job in a raffle, could that be the reason why he's written that column?
It's a chicken and egg thing, isn't it? One of those things has come first, and it's probably a reaction to the other.
Yeah.
We've had a theory in from Dom Risk about Alan's parents, because there's obviously some confusion across the books about which ones are dead and which ones are alive. He said, Mum died in the first book, Dad was a mess, Alan took charge. Dad died in the second book, Mum a mess, Alan took charge. So already you know, these two theories can't coexist.
Mm-hmm. Unreliable narration.
So he thinks the he's a cynical part of me would suggest that Alan got such a good comeback from the first book that he made up the second.
Yep.
Or alternatively, his dad remarried and the adult Alan is the sort of person that would call his dad's new wife mum.
That's quite an interesting second.
Yeah,
theory,
a few things to unpick there. I mean, obviously, both, you know, it can't be that his mum and his dad both died first. So
yeah.
One of these theories has to be true. I mean, in cases like this, I sort of think the first theory that Alan got such good comeback from the first book that he made up the second, that seems very likely. Mm. Equally, it's just writer error. You know, perhaps the writers of Partridge just missed the death of one of the parents.
I think that's one of the few things we found across the APE where there isn't a definitive version. There isn't anything. We don't know which is supposed to be correct, and whether that's an intentional error or not, we'll probably never know.
But we do know that there's someone that they pay to archive all of this stuff and manage the timeline.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. That person should probably have been fired by now.
Maybe they were having a day off on that day.
We've got five bits of Nomad's tits bits. So we've got a few Nomad bits to go through. So starting with when we announced that we'd be covering Nomad, we include a lovely picture of our good selves.
It really was a lovely picture.
Lovely picture. Our first bit of response to that was from Liv Fleming, who says, disappointed that you've chosen to make Nomad into a serialised primetime podcast when, and I cannot stress this enough, it should simply be about honouring Alan's dead father. Unbelievable.
I mean, I believe we did put in the blurb when we announced this that it would be a podcast recorded, a dead dad honoured.
Yes, so, that's very true. Know,
that was very much part of our thinking.
I like that we're prime time, though. She's got that bit right.
Oh, yeah.
Primetime podcast.
I mean, you know, listen to it at 7 o'clock. It's prime time.
Exactly.
Aid Dodds said, nice to see what you all look like, though I expected you to have far nicer eyes. I think it's a bit harsh. I think we've all got quite fetching eyes.
I expected you to have more constructive feedback.
Lovely eyes.
Robert Jebb said about the picture, they looked like the band the Beatles could have been.
Hopefully not in real time.
Dave Hughes got in touch on Twitter with a bit of extra Edmonds trivia. Always welcome. I had a Hornby train set back in the late 80s and he narrated the cassette that came with it about putting the track together. Must have been hard times at that point. I don't think it'd be hard times, really. I think he was probably just cashing in on the BBC fame.
Just taking every opportunity he can.
Hornby in the 80s, that could be some serious money.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, yeah. Yeah,
that's,
they were massive.
That's the Clash of Clans of the 80s, probably.
That is an actual gravy train coming to a door.
Yeah, that was very good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You should have gone there with the...
There we go. Yeah. We're in a new studio, so we've got access to new facilities and new features. Next up, I suggested that Ian McShane would make a great Lionel Partridge. Mick Hennessy says Ian McShane would make a very good Flint, I reckon. I think he's possibly right.
Yeah, good one.
Yeah.
Could play both characters. That could be the thing. It's like slightly different makeup and slightly
that's
different
Flint
hair.
Alan's fictitious detective series, isn't
yes.
it?
Yeah.
Yes.
Which one smoked in the bed and potentially burnt his wife to
death?
That's
Flint.
Was it? I thought that was Swallow, the firefighter.
No, Flint. Oh.
Swallow's the detective.
Oh. Yeah,
Flint's the firefighter.
Who's Poirot? let's move on.
In summary, I think basically, dear the Gibbons, get Ian McShane in the APU pronto. Dippy V, in touch again, says, wonder how many audiobooks were bought of Nomad. I bought it and not a hard copy. I think, from my personal experience, I think a lot of people that I know listened to the audiobook of iPartridge. So I wonder if the effect of that and that sort of like getting a bit of word of mouth, oh, have you listened to the audiobook? Mm. It's Steve Coogan reading it as Alan, had an impact directly on Nomad audiobook sales as well.
I wonder actually, because when we have talked about the sales figures that we have been able to find for the books, whether they actually include audiobook sales?
They wouldn't do, no. They'd no? just be hard. They'd just
as
be hardback
as
and
our
paperback.
Resident publishing expert.
As
okay.
publishing expert or the closest thing you can get to around this table.
It'll do.
Yeah, yeah. Those were definitely just hardback and paperback sales.
Okay, so it's not like in the music industry, CD, download, streaming is all one chart. That'd
no,
be
they,
a different thing. Okay.
They report separately. It's okay. Hardback, paperback and audio. Right. And finally, just in this section, Darren Evans on Twitter says, I once saw a seagull attack and kill a pigeon in Cardiff. When I came back that way about an hour later, it was eating its head. Bye.
What's that in reference to? There's a seagull attack in Nomad? Or?
Yes, him and Bill Oddie are talking about seagulls and he calls them jackals of the sky.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
And then, we did about half an episode just talking about seagulls.
It was a very confusing time. it's that point in every episode of the podcast that we like to talk about ant stats. I'm fucking with you. It's the first time we've covered this. Matt Andrews got in touch on Twitter and said, I wanted to dive into Alan's ridiculous claim about ants. Here's his quote. Even the tiny ant, who can carry weight equivalent to a human lifting, at a guess, 60 skyscrapers. Now, clearly this was included because Alan's numbers are wrong, but I wondered how wrong, so I did the maths.
Great, great. Really keen to hear this.
The strongest ants can lift around 5,000 times their body weight. The strongest humans can lift around 7.4 times their body weight. That still seems pretty amazing.
That's a lot.
60 skyscrapers would weigh about 13 million tons. This equates to a human lifting over 215,000 times their body weight. If an ant could lift 215,000 times their body weight, this would be just over 1 kilogram. Put another way, Alan is suggesting a single ant can lift 7 apples simultaneously or 1.5 loaves of bread. But my favourite thing about this this message from Matt Andrews is that he then goes on to send us links to all of his sources. Biggest weight lifted by a human, 457 kilograms from The New Scientist. Average human weight, 62 kilograms from BBC. Strongest ant lift ratio. Average weight of an ant, 60 milligrams. Average weight of a skyscraper. And then he ends by saying, note, I'm not a statistician, biologist, or even very good at maths. So take all of the above with a pinch of salt. Thanks. That's a huge amount of research. We appreciate that. Thank you very much, Matt.
So good. So good. I've just realised something. Matt Andrews gets even better because the next message we have to read out is also from Matt Andrews. He writes, absolutely loving the old fuck off Nick in the opening jingle. Feel like this needs to become a regular sound effect whenever polls are suggested, etc. So it's time to talk Twitter polls.
Oh, fuck off, Nick.
Finally, I thought this moment would never happen, but it's been given the spotlight it rightly deserves, and I'm only furious that it's not an entire episode on its own. But I get to talk about our polls, which have been phenomenally successful. Can't thank everyone enough that's participated. They've been a huge success, and I think everyone agrees. So the Twitter...
There was broad agreement.
Of that, there can be no doubt.
Yeah, I like the polls. Their votes seem to suggest.
People like them. We should do more of them.
So what we're going to do is just run you through the results of the polls to, one, highlight just how staggeringly popular they are, and two, just to quickly summarise what the results were. So we ran a poll each week as part of our last series of the podcast.
Can I just say we didn't do it each week? We ended four by the looks of it. We did four
polls, and they were as follows. So we asked, after discussing Alan's dislike of Fairground by Simply Red this week, we thought we'd take it to you, the listeners, for the definitive answer. So essentially, was the song Fairground by Simply Red a banger? The answer was either yes or no. You've answered that question, and somehow 27% of you thought yes, it was a banger. You're wrong.
Yeah, it is a banger. It is a banger.
Backed. So I'm the only one that thinks it's not a banger.
Yes, but you are in line with the voting public, so talk us through the results.
So, well, I was trying to, mate. and 73% of you said, no, it's awful, and I'm 100% with you. So there was pretty much conclusive evidence there that it's an absolutely terrible
scum. Unbelievable.
Scum. Subhuman scum.
We then went on to do a poll around the footsteps of our father sketch.
Our father.
sketch logo.
Our father who art in Alan.
Be quiet, Brother Adam. so we...
That is the new studio coming into its own. Yes. There. Brilliant.
So we all drew a picture of the footsteps of my father logo, which was
with staggering results, to be honest.
Which was easier said than done. We put it to you to vote for who did the best one, and there is a winner.
Looking at yours, it's absolutely cracking me up. Why are the feet so massive? And why is there a tiny face between the shoes?
I think what happened was I forgot basically what was happening. just drew some big
feet. I mean, that does happen pretty much every recording day. Yep. So yeah.
So let's get to the answers here. So should we do it in reverse order?
Yeah.
So
yes.
Just to really heighten.
I think we probably should.
So somehow in fourth place, it's me with 14% of the
votes. I'm not surprised you're in fourth place. I'm surprised you've managed to amass 14% of the vote, to be honest.
Thanks, listening public. In third place is Tom Dark with 19% of the votes.
Disappointing.
Second place is Adam with 32%, but our winner was Tom Stab with 35% of the votes.
Yay!
An absolute steal.
I demand a second vote.
So, yeah, if you're a government, not enough to command a majority, so actually not that great a victory.
I am willing to create a coalition with Tom Stab of people that can draw, though.
Okay, next we asked about your guilty pleasure snack choices. So we asked which was the worst. finally common sense has shone through here. So
what's the worst thing?
So in reverse order is me with Super Noodles. So that's you saying that it's ultimately good.
And the then, best of a bad bunch, shall we say.
It's the least bad. It's not. I'm not saying it's good.
Next was Tom Dark with ham and salad cream. Again, quite functional, quite normal. Adam then starting to tip into vulgarity here with gherkins and barbecue mayo. But the clear winner was Tom Stab with a stock cube packet, which frankly I think is something that...
Can you talk me through this?
Crucially, you
snack.
Just said the word winner, so that's two polls in a row that I've won. And so interestingly, exactly the same order as well.
Winner of the worst in that one. Yeah. So you've won the shitty crown.
Just briefly, how does that work? You've used the bulk of the stock cube recipe, and then you lick the powder?
Let's go over this again,
so,
shall we?
Yeah, so, okay. Right, I'm making some kind of stew or curry or something that requires stock.
So far, so sane.
Yep, I've unwrapped the stock cube or opened the, what they called the gel type thing, stock flavour pot things.
Okay.
I've dropped it in. The main item has been deployed into the food stuff.
Okay.
I'm left with either the crumbly remnants of the cube, or I'm left with
like
the kind of
gooey residue.
Or I'm left with in the stock pot a kind of sort of like a little sauce at the bottom there, and I just kind of stick my tongue in and around the foil packet.
Disgusting.
Or the stock pot and really get in there. It's pure flavour. It's my little guilty pleasure. I hold it back for myself.
And 52% of our listeners agreed that it was the worst.
Yeah, approximately 82 people have taken the time out of their day to tell you that this is reviled. And disgusted them.
Although I've just remembered that a guilty snack pleasure. Oh damn! I wish I'd remembered this earlier, but I'll see if I can dig it out. But there was something in an interview or something. Cilla Black, God rest her soul, said that she loved to get a beef stock cube, open it, and rub it on a segment of orange, and then eat the orange.
What?
Yeah, I'm going to try and dig that out. That I'm confident that I'm not making that up and that she actually said that.
I reckon Jed would eat.
Also keen to try.
We also had a message on Instagram. I think it's just quickly worth resurfacing that.
This is insane.
This is another kind of guilty pleasure snack for the 5-minute fondue. That's trademarked. So it's in it's in five handy steps. Point one, get home drunk. That's crucial. Two, take half a pint of milk and a block of cheddar cheese. Three, combine both in a bowl with some fresh ground black pepper. Four, microwave for 4 minutes or until all the cheese has melted into the milk. And then five, drink. Be careful of the bowl because the molten milky cheese can cause some serious facial burns. And that was from McCafferty21 on Instagram. So thank you. But I think that sounds absolutely disgusting.
I think we just replied to that with staggering, didn't we?
Yeah, it's gross. And then finally, quite a contentious one, but we talked about whether cauliflower cheese had any role in a Christmas dinner. The results were quite conclusive on this one. So 23% said yes, it's traditional, but 77% of you said no, it's not traditional. I think from memory, Adam would have been a massive backer of cauliflower cheese.
I think the issue here is that even I would concede that it's not necessarily traditional, but that doesn't mean that it isn't absolutely welcome and these days an essential part of the mix.
Essential. Wow.
As we move into a more multicultural society, cauliflower cheese needs to be accepted.
But be more welcoming. That's what Adam
was saying. So that was a quick wrap up of the polls. But I think the clear winner was that the polls were massive and people liked them. So we should continue doing a weekly or almost weekly poll.
Yeah. And can I also say that you're bigging up the polls, but I'm the one here who actually does them and puts them live.
Oh, behind the looking glass there. Drawing back the velvet curtain.
That's why
actually works.
That's why Nick's a strong advocate for an hourly poll from now until the end. Time. Okay, as we've come to expect from you wonderful listeners, we've actually got so much feedback that we're going to have to crack the back of this into two episodes. So thank you so much for all your feedback that we've covered this time, and we'll be back relatively shortly with some more of your feedback before we delve into our next series proper. If you want to add to the feedback pile, then please do. On Instagram, it's at @monkeytennispod. On Twitter, it's at @thepartridgepod. We're facebook.com/thepartridgepod, thepartridgepod@gmail.com. And the WhatsApp voice line is open for your calls, 07923 600 017. If you want to leave us feedback through any of those mediums, if you're using WhatsApp, please leave a voice note, and then we might pick it up in a future episode. And we certainly love to hear your theories and all the things we fucked up.
And it's mostly our errors that we'll be hearing about. Yeah.
So on that bombshell, that's everything from us at Monkey Tennis, the Alan Partridge fan podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Please do subscribe and give us a review on iTunes if you're enjoying what you're hearing. And we will be back very soon with more of your feedback. Thanks and goodbye.
Goodbye.
See ya.
I must complete the journey that my father never could. I must do it on foot. Can't remember why. It will be called the footsteps of my father walk. My home isn't insulated.
Monkey tennis?
Heathrow is just an absolute tit of an airport. Quite simply, cows.
Monkey tennis?
With a stupid Ewok head.
Blubber on him, Knowlesy.
Love you, Aim.
Monkey tennis?
A total wazzock of a guy. Infinity, the final frontier.
Monkey tennis?
We will talk about it now, Mr. Nichols.
Monkey tennis?
Motherfucker. Gary Wilmot.
Okay.
Sue Cook.
Okay.
Dale Winton.
Okay.
Monkey tennis?
Oh, fuck off, Nick.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.